This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, it's the evening edition with Kelvin Yee, Amar Rashad and Cam Raslan.
Coming up, we'll discuss the reliance of industries on foreign labour.
And you can always join a conversation. Call 7733 2900, WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. All this coming your way on the evening edition.
BFM 89.9, the business station.
It is 6:05 now. Very briefly, before we get to our story about foreign labour, earlier in the hour we were talking about Australia and how, just a bit of a clarification, some of the over 33,000 Malaysians who have overstayed their visa in Australia, well, it's not all of them that are applying for refugee status. Rather, some of them are claiming refugee status. So we've been asking for your thoughts. You know, has your experience applying for a visa to go to Australia changed? And also just any stories overall. So we have this one from Husni here that says, I applied for an Australian visa in May this year. Took me about 2 weeks to get it approved as promised. Everything was done online. In my case, I was requested to submit additional documents. For example, a copy of bank statement, passport, and so on. I only used a snapshot of my Maybank to your account for submission, and that was accepted, so that was convenient. My only peeve was I was not able to talk to anybody for clarification on submitting all those documents online. It was just email. It was just email away, sit back, and cross my fingers for 2 weeks.
Yes, and I guess there's no appeal. If you are turned down, then there's just no appeal.
You have to just reapply and pay again or something.
Yeah, and it is quite a steep fee to pay if you do get rejected. And to our question earlier about, you know, actually, how do you end up applying for a refugee status? We have this here that says that, referring to the previous government, refugee application was as simple as saying, I insulted a minister on Facebook or joined a bursary rally and now the government is after me. Or even, my life is in danger because I took a loan from an illegal moneylender. It's just an easier way to live in Australia legally.
Well, I can't confirm that because even like anecdotally, I have encountered some people who have tried to apply for PR status in Australia, like even though they've never really like have a job offer there or even stayed there. And it does seem quite complicated, lots of forms to fill, lots of bureaucracy. So, I don't know, I guess some people just go the easy way and just oversee their visa or like claim refugee status.
Yeah, just to clarify then, so one more time, it's 33,000 who have overstayed their visa. Welcome, and we think it's about 5,000.
About 5,000 who applied for a protection visa.
Right.
Yeah, though I think to this, to just add to this, I think in some instances, it's not so much that they are purposefully overstaying, but rather they just happen to be scammed, right? And I think we've heard of that happening in some places. I think we recently saw a case in Cambodia, if I'm not mistaken, where they were scammed to, unfortunately, and they ended up working overtime and overstayed their visa.
Yeah, you're so generous soul, aren't you? I'm sure.
Trying to be empathetic.
I'm sure our Malaysian brothers and sisters were scammed, in 33,000 of them, and therefore have overstayed their welcome.
Anyway, if you have any thoughts, you can send them to us, 018-789-8899. That's our WhatsApp. Call 7733-2900. And you can also tweet us at BFM Radio. Now for our next story, we're discussing how reliant some industries are on foreign labour and the government's efforts to reduce this reliance. So an article in the South China Morning Post pointed out that many businesses still need low-skilled foreign workers to do dirty, difficult and dangerous jobs, or 3D jobs as we know them, which Malaysians tend to avoid.
So the government has been trying to sort of reduce the size of foreign labour here by more than 130,000 within 5 years. And during the budget announcement, Budget 2020, the Finance Minister Lim Guan Eng announced the Locals at Work initiative, which offers Malaysians up to 500 ringgit per month for 2 years to replace foreign workers, while also offering companies 250 ringgit per month during the same period.
Now, the government also wants businesses to hire more high-skilled Malaysians. nations and turn to automation to develop the economy. But it's not so straightforward, especially for SMEs and the manufacturing and plantation sectors. The Federation of Malaysian Manufacturers said that the growth of SMEs are slow because it takes time, because of the time it takes to approve foreign worker applications. So local employees remain the first choice, but in many cases, to no avail. And this perhaps relates to the issue of Malaysians avoiding 3D jobs.
Well, I think the knee-jerk reaction is to think that, you know, foreign workers, over-reliance on foreign workers is bad. Mm-hmm. I think that would be the thing. I have a contrarian view on that, in that in many places we have industries that would only exist in this country because of foreign workers. Palm oil, for instance. I don't know. Rubber, yes. Malaysians, took part in the rubber industry. But I don't know if Malaysians have ever really been involved in the palm oil industry.
I think in terms of the management roles, because I've shot a documentary about about some palm oil plantations, and the management side of it is by Malaysians, but the unskilled low-level workers are mostly, in fact, I think maybe entirely foreign labour, as you pointed out, Ken.
Yeah, previously Indonesian, now sort of moving over to Bangladeshi. It's back-breaking work. I wouldn't wish it on anybody, let alone Indonesians and Bangladeshis. But it's there are many areas, and then there are areas where Malaysians were working in factory work to make shoes or whatever, and Malaysians no longer want to do that work, and the foreign workers have come in. Now, you talk about automation, that's a major investment for a company who would have to have great faith that they will be in operation, come what may, for another, I don't know, 5 years. Mm. Whereas if you have, it's one of the things about Malaysia that when I've spoken to many investors, that Malaysia is very quick on its feet, that it can react fast to demand, and it can close down fast if need be. And if you've got debt from automation, then you might think twice.
Well, I think the drive here is really to see how, you know, for a long time, many of our industries, many of our parts of our economy have relied heavily on the low-cost, low-skilled labour that comes usually from other countries. And I think maybe the effort here is trying to wean companies off those, right, so that they can start investing more in devices, in machinery, in tech that allows their workers to be more to be more productive. And I think that's something that has been that's been something that the government has really been trying to do, because so long as this supply is available, so long as there is this demand and desire to have workers come in and then leave as quickly as they can, then what happens there essentially is that, you know, we will never move ahead, right? We will never turn the economy into one that is solely focused on tech, that is skill intensive, because that's where we want to be and that's where income growth will come from.
Yeah, that's a dream, isn't it?
Well, it's a dream that we're trying to work towards.
Yeah, but maybe that's good for other economies, but we can fill a space where we can manufacture goods cheaper than anyone else, and we'll be happy to do that.
I mean, like, there is an economic theory that sort of posits that if the more migrant labor that you have, it sort of dampens the income growth in the receiving country. But there are several ways of looking at that, I guess, because first of all, the migrant workers work in Malaysia fulfill a field that isn't necessarily filled up by Malaysians. So there is a question of how exactly would that directly impact the growth of income. But in a way, you can sort of see how companies prefer to sort of seek foreign labor because they can hire them for cheaper rather than look for ways to hire local talent. And I think the initiative Locals at Work, I guess, is to encourage companies to hire more local workers over foreign workers. But at the same time, they're also encouraging automation as well, which is sort of like a replacement of labor. So it's not just about. So there's, I don't know if this is a contradictory thing, but it seems that if you encourage automation, that it's not really about encouraging employment of more local workers, but the reduction of foreign labor through automation. So basically, both locals, if automation were to be fully implemented, for example, then both locals and foreign
workers
will miss out, yeah. Especially the unskilled one or low-skilled ones.
So after this, we are going to dive a bit deeper with Dr. Shankaran Nambiar, Senior Research Fellow at the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research, right after this. So keep it here on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Because freedom matters, BFM 89.9.
It is almost 6:17. You're with Kelvin, Ayman and Cam on the Evening Edition. So we are talking about how some industries are not yet ready for the government's push to reduce reliance on foreign labor, and also the push to, you know, hire more local workers and to be more tech intensive. So we are going to talk a bit more about this, and we have on the line Dr. Shankaran Nambiar, Senior Research Fellow at the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research. Dr. Nambiar, thanks so much for joining us this evening. Who's likely to be affected the most from this move to reduce the number of foreign workers?
I think it's the small businessmen, those who run restaurants, those who are in the SME sector, small and medium enterprises. They are the ones who are likely to be most affected, and of course those in the plantation sector.
Right. And in the short term, how will the adjustment to having fewer low-skilled foreign workers look like?
I guess in the short term, it's likely to be painful. There's likely to be a maladjustment to having fewer foreign workers available. Business has got its own dynamic, and in some of the areas that I've just mentioned, it's probably difficult to make a quick adjustment. And in the case of, for instance, the restaurants, the hospitality industry, I guess it would directly result in increase in the cost of services that are being provided. Whereas in the plantation sector, for instance, I would imagine that there would be companies that plantation companies that might want to move out of the country, and I think that's probably likely to be the case with the SME sector too. I don't know how well adjusted, how well prepared they are to carry out business under conditions where less low-skilled foreign workers are available.
So when that happens, how do you think these businesses will work out the labor shortage? Will it push them to invest more in more technology?
I think the intention is commendable. It's excellent. And I think that is the way Malaysia has to go forward. We can't afford to be in the position that we are in right now, and we can't afford to be in it for too long. The question of adjustment, that's a separate one. And that is something that would have to be looked at from the point of view of SMEs, for instance. It's quite a different question as to whether SMEs are prepared, they are ready, and whether they are ready right now to invest in tech. Looking at the situation from a macroeconomic perspective, it's easy to say that this is what we need to do. But someone who owns a small enterprise would have a very different logic. He might either run out of business, he might not be able to go ahead with his business. He might decide to relocate his SME corporation, or he might rise up to the occasion and invest in more technology. So it's, I think, really difficult to predict what would happen at this point. And I tend to suspect that the SMEs would in Malaysia would want to delay the process of acquiring new technology, of upgrading technology, of automating. And they probably even see investing in existing human capital as an expense that can be avoided or that should be avoided.
So then do you think that Budget 2020 will be effective when it comes to incentivizing the move to have more local participation in the workforce?
I think Budget 2020 does have its sights on this issue. So there have been some good incentives, for instance, to encourage technology for Malaysia to move ahead, to move into the area of digital economy, for instance. I think there are also very good incentives on the side of the workforce, trying to get women, for instance, into the workplace, thus freeing up the any labor shortage that might exist. There's also an incentive for the replacement of foreign workers. So I think on both sides, on trying to encourage R&D and trying to encourage this move to a more high-tech economy, you have incentives. You also have incentives on the labor side. But I think there is a point where the incentives, although they might exist, might not really meet. And I think that is really a concern. You might offer incentives, but it's quite a different question as to whether the company wants to take up those incentives. Company might still think that it's way cheaper to employ foreign workers.
Now, with that said, do you think the budget helps to push the economy to become one that's more tech-intent and less resource-heavy?
I'm not very sure if the budget would have sufficient force, whether it's carefully enough designed to be taken up by companies, SMEs in particular, in that respect. I'm not sure if it can give the right kind of nudge that is sensitive to the needs of SMEs, or whether it would be attractive as viewed from an SME perspective.
Last year, Bank Negara said that the easy availability of cheap, low-skilled foreign workers sort of depresses wages for local workers. What are your thoughts on this?
I have no argument with the rationale that Bank Negara has come out with. I'm in complete agreement with the proposition that the easy availability of cheap, low-skilled foreign workers would lead employers to take it easy, which is why, as I said, at the macroeconomic level, this is a constraint. What I'm worried about is figuring out what exactly motivates employers and whether employers see the labor situation in the same way as policymakers do. At a macro level, yes, of course, Malaysia needs to be more tech intensive. It needs to be more productivity. And there's an urgent need to move into Industry 4.0, etc. My question is whether employers feel the same urgency, and what is it that really motivates employers, particularly from the SME sector? They might not see things the same way as the government or the policy workers see things.
Is there a way, how do I put this? Is there a way for either the government or perhaps any other party to help the private sector readjust their lenses to see it from the perspective that if they can't get low-skilled workers anymore, the other way is to move towards the direction that the government wants?
I think that is something that has to be worked upon. I think it takes some amount of convincing the SME sector to look at things in the same way as the government does. And I think the incentive structure would have to be more closely aligned with the needs of the SME sector. I'm not worried about the MNCs. They know what they're doing. They realize the need for R&D. They realize the need for moving up the value chain, for upgrading technology. It's the SME sector which is really cause for concern. And I think policymakers need to work more closely with the SME sector and to see how the incentive structure can be geared to satisfy their needs or to nudge them appropriately.
Dr. Nambiah, thanks so much for speaking with us today. That was Dr. Shankaran Nambiah, Senior Research Fellow at the Malaysian Institute of Economic Research, talking to us about the government's move to reduce our reliance on foreign workers.
I am unsure about this. This is a revolution, a concept. The whole concept is a revolutionary change for the Malaysian economy, that we have worked with and relied upon foreign labour throughout the history of this land and before. To suddenly say that we can in Budget 2020 become Switzerland is, I don't know. I just don't think we're ready for it, and I don't think we're set up for it. I mean, rather blithely, I'm afraid, Dr. Nambiah was saying how, you know, oh, yes, there will be some companies which will feel the pain. No, they're not just going to feel the pain. They will be pushed into non-existence.
Yeah, they will likely have to fold.
Yeah.
But I'm not sure if that necessarily just signals the fact that perhaps some of the way we've chosen to run our businesses may not have been savvy in the first place, though I think that's quite a huge accusation on my end, for me to on my part to say that.
How unsuccessful has the Malaysian economy
been? Yeah.
How, seriously? Are we that bad?
Yeah, that's an answer. I don't have that answer.
Yeah, we're not.
If you have any thoughts on this story, you can send it to us. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. You can also call 7733-2900. This is the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my. BFM 89.9, the business station.